Hey guys, it's Jess. I want to pop on and record a quick podcast to talk about a couple of handouts that I just put together. I've uploaded them on the Google Drive and I'm going to email them out to everyone as well. But it's a couple of concepts that I have often used with families to discuss concepts related to therapy and behavior and regulation that I thought visuals would be really helpful for. So the first one that I made is a little handout about anchor skills and floater skills. So I often have used this kind of verbiage to talk with families in the past about skills, like the foundational skills that we need to address to meet the parents' goals. A lot of times parents come in to our sessions and they want us to address really high-level skills, right? The things that they're seeing as being deficient. Verbal language, academics, handwriting, following directions. I've had parents come in and tell me I want my child to make eye contact with me. Task initiation for independent ADLs. You know, they often will say, well, they know how to do it. Physically, they can do it, but they won't do it. And oftentimes, this is, I would say, most often happening with our kids who are autistic. And when we assess them, we find that they have pretty significant delays with engagement, regulation, problem solving, motor planning, two-way interaction, sometimes symbolic thinking. So I always will try to explain to families, like, these skills, you might not see them. They don't look like anything, right? But they are behind. And sometimes I'll give the example of, you know, if your child is like at a 3-month level for engagement, for example, how could we expect them to do ADLs that are expected of a 12-year-old? And these skills, because they are so much lower than maybe where the rest of their skills are, they become the anchor. They anchor this boat, and you're trying to address these higher level skills, but you have a huge gap between your anchor skills and your floater skills. So your goals, your high level skills that you want to see change, aren't going to go anywhere unless you address the foundation and you bring up the anchor. So I made a little handout on that. An example that I've used recently to talk to a family about this is a kid who the parents wanted them into a special autism program, and the child didn't qualify. And basically the feedback that they got was, well, they can't count to 100. They can't do simple math, like, you know, simple subtraction and addition. And, you know, they can't recognize all their letters or, like, match sounds to letters, that sort of thing. But this is a kid who, I mean, can barely engage with me. So learning has been limited and always has been. And mom was very confused. She's like, he's done AVA for such a long time. They were working on these things. And I was trying to explain to her, but his engagement and his sustained attention and two-way interaction is down, like, under less than a year old. And I would never expect a 1-year-old to have any of those academic skills. I also was explaining to her that a lot of the things that they wanted him to do were symbolic in nature. Math is symbolic and abstract. Handwriting is as well, too. We have their symbols that represent something. Reading is symbolic. He's not even close to having any pretend play. He has not hit level 5, not even level 4, in the DIR model. So he doesn't have these precursor skills to support that. So that's the first handout that I did. The other handout is more along the lines of regulation. And this is, again, some verbiage that I've used with families to help them explain and reshape their perspective around behaviors. So this one is called drowning in big emotions. So I've often used this analogy with parents when their child is having a meltdown, whether it is, you know, some of our older kids who will be like, Mom, you're so stupid, and start name calling, or our kids who start having like really aggressive, big behaviors, to explain to them, like, dysregulation is a lot like drowning. So instead of seeing the behaviors and seeing your kid melt down, pretend to them that they're drowning. And what do we do when someone's drowning? We jump in to save them. We bring them to safety. And we have to recognize that they are drowning in big emotions, and they need us to get them to safety. We would not, take a person who is drowning and criticize them for whatever language they're using. You're not drowning correctly. You need to ask for help. You didn't even say help. You're just splashing your arms around. You know, like, we would never criticize. We shouldn't be criticizing when a child is drowning in big emotions and having a meltdown either, or correcting or using language or logic. You know, we don't talk to somebody who's drowning and say, you just have to like put your arms down into the water, kick your feet a little bit, like teach them how to swim. That's not the time to teach them how to swim. They can't learn anything. And we know this. So when parents think about it from that perspective, sometimes it's helpful. But the other thing to think about is that when someone's drowning, they're very likely to take you down with them because they're in such a state of panic, right? They're desperately looking for safety and looking for your help. They're not getting it in the appropriate way. It's not logical. But people who are trained to rescue other people are taught you need to be careful because that person could also drown you. And I believe I've even been taught in some situations to knock them out instead if it comes down to it. Otherwise, they will drown both people. But our kids who are in distress are very similar and they will seek out comfort, right? Misery does love company and we want to feel safe and together in a state of distress, not alone. So they might seek that attention out and that connection out in an inappropriate way. Like I said, name calling or yelling or crying or getting really whiny, but that's still a sign that, hey, I need you. So this perspective shift to help parents think about when your kid is drowning these big emotions, that is their cry for help. And it doesn't look like a cry for help. It's not logical and it's not the time for you to try to use logic. It's a time for us to just bring them to safety, just regulate them. I'm here for you. I'm going to help you. Let's work through this until you feel safe and secure emotionally, and then we can try to problem solve. So this handout I put together is a nice visual for that and talks to parents about, you know, this is not the time to blame, shame, criticize, punish, problem solve, use logic, or try to convince them, and to not react to their behaviors, that they have to be the life raft that gets them to emotional safety. You know, they have to stay calm. Their only job in that moment is to empathize with a child and validate big feelings because drowning is scary and overwhelming and nobody wants to be alone in it. And to keep in mind that their brain and their body are seeking safety. So we need to provide comfort. And then I think the most important thing is to praise them for calming down, for reaching survival, to reaching safety, rather than punishing them for drowning in their big emotions. Because the reality is, many adults and almost all of our kids, typical or atypical in development, don't have a mature frontal lobe to manage these emotions. Their actual neurology in their brain is not set up for managing these big expectations that unfortunately they often have to face. So this is a nice handout. The time that comes to mind when I use this terminology with a patient, she was a 13-year-old who was very easily dysregulated. And the minute she felt any kind of stress or anxiety, she took it out on her mom. And her mom was relatively kind of calm and cool and collected, but she was very easily triggered by name calling. And this girl would immediately go, gosh, mom, you're so stupid. Why would you say that? That's not even what happened. And I finally used this analogy with mom and I said, you have to be careful. Don't let her take you down. Don't follow her down that rabbit hole. Because the first thing mom would do would be like, that's it. I'm taking away this, I'm doing that. And she would try to take control over the situation. So I said, she's drowning. Let's help her find safety and emotional comfort. Don't go down that rabbit hole with her because we have to stay afloat to keep her afloat. And that seemed to help mom figure out in that moment. And then it was also really easy terminology I could use when I was coaching moms. In that moment when I would see the girl get upset and start name calling and I could see mom start to spiral, I could say, grab your life vest, or I could say, don't follow her down that rabbit hole. And mom knew exactly what I was talking about and she would shift gears. So it can be a really great tool, I think, for coaching and for parent education. If you have any questions or you want to add anything to these, I'm certainly open to feedback. So let me know.